Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
And now in depth on a novel of friendship and innocence and memory. Maybe you caught that show last month about the new social science on friendship. We started out talking about the reciprocity of friendship, how our friends may not like us as much as we like them. But the most revealing part of that show to me was what our conversation about what an act of vulnerability it is to be a good friend to someone, including when they are at their most vulnerable. Here's psychologist Amy Banks from the show.
When you're in that point where you're so vulnerable, whether from a sickness or some, you know, major life event, maybe a divorce or what have you, a death of a child, you desperately need your people to help buffer you in those moments. And when they leave, it's crushing.
Writer Jacqueline Woodson so clearly understands this. Her new novel puts us inside the powerful circle of friendship and love among four young girls in Brooklyn. And she tells us that she mined her own experiences, quote, rediscovering the deep love I had for my friends. So as Jacqueline Woodson joins us this morning, I want to invite you into the conversation. Is there or was there a childhood friend in your life who helped shape the person that you are today? I mean, I can think of one instantly. Someone who brings out your best self. So I want to hear from you again on this idea that you had a childhood friend, you still have that childhood friend today, and you are who you are in some measure because of that friendship. Someone who brings out your best self. Think about that. Join the conversation when you're ready. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can talk to me about it on Twitter. It's at CarrieNPR. Jacqueline Woodson is the author of many young adult and middle grade books. Her memoir is titled Brown Girl Dreaming. Her new novel for adults is called Another Brooklyn. And she's with us. Are you with us today from Brooklyn, from New York City? Jackie, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Oh, it's good to be here. I'm actually in Manhattan, but I rushed to Manhattan from Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn, okay. When I look back on the power of my friendships in adolescence, there's kind of a romantic quality to them. You know, this excitement that you might get to spend a whole day and a night with your friend. I think it's something that only happens in your life at that age. And I'm interested in what you remember about that.
It's funny because I remember the same thing. I remember always wanting to sleep over my best friend Maria Ocasio's house and my mother not getting it and saying, you know, you have a perfectly good bed here and a good house here and a good meal here. But there was something, I never could get enough of the time I spent with my close friends. And it's funny because I'm seeing it in my 14-year-old daughter now and really trying to remember my own self at that age before I say no to her, you know, and remembering how important it was to have those moments with your close friends.
I know it's natural that, you know, the friendship, the kind of bonds that you have with friends and the quality of those friendships are going to change as you mature. But I have to say, I think it's one of the only things that I miss about, you know, those 12, 13, 14-year-old days. There's just nothing like it.
It's true. But and I do agree. I think it does change. But there doesn't have to be a sense of loss to it. And that was one of the things that inspired me to write Another Brooklyn. I was meeting so many women who didn't have these close female relationships or didn't have those friends that they had had when they were young. And I just wondered, well, what happened to it? What happened to the relationships? What happened to the friendships? How come they didn't just get deeper and older and continue to change as we change? Why did sometimes they have to be completely severed? So I started investigating.
Well, so, I mean, so do you mean that? Do you mean that why haven't you maintained those same friendships, you know, that you if you live in the same place? Or do you mean why don't we form those kinds of, you know, that kind of relationship with our friends as we did?
I think both. I mean, I am still very close friends with my best friend from childhood.
Oh, you're lucky.
And she lives in Florida, and I live in Brooklyn. I'm still close with the people who live in my neighborhood, some of who still live in that neighborhood. I don't anymore. But and then I have a group of friends that I've been friends with for 30 years, you know, who I met in college or right out of college. And we're a village. I mean, we're raising our kids together. We go to each other when times are hard. We know that we have this foundation that are the people who we can deeply trust, who we can cry in front of, who we can be, as you talked about earlier, vulnerable in front of, and know that they have our backs. And I just think that it takes work. It takes it takes that vulnerability, and it you know, and it takes trust, and it's so worth it. I couldn't imagine walking through the world without my girls.
You know, when I that show that we did last month about friendship, when I really had a sense about how deep this vulnerability goes and how closely we kind of protect against it, is when people called to say, you know, I had an experience where I needed my friends like I've never needed them before. And I learned who my friends really were. Now, that's that experience of being vulnerable and opening yourself to say, I need you, which a lot of us don't do on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And the pain that some of our listeners still felt over that, well, you could hear it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I can't imagine that. I can't imagine not having people be there for me. I mean, you know, and I think if they can't be there for me, I'd have to investigate that in terms of what's the turmoil they're going through. What's the thing that's happening within them that maybe I need to meet them halfway with and kind of put my pain to the side for a few minutes and help them through what they need to be helped through. And then, you know, there is that back and forth and give and take that is friendship. And I get it. If I'm going through a hard time and someone else might be have just lost their mother or is in financial crisis and maybe can't talk about it, like it's a complex relationship, but I think it requires a lot of heart and a lot of understanding and a lot of meeting each other where we are. And yeah, I think hearts get broken. I think friends break up. And I think that in and of itself is something that is worth investigating.
So so you have held on to these close friendships from college, and you have this close friendship from childhood. Can you think mm-hmm. back to maybe the way your mother role modeled friendship? This is something that comes up in the novel, and it's something that I've thought about a lot. And it's something that clearly you're doing for your kids.
Yeah, I think it's so important for my kids. My two of my best friends, who we've been friends for a long time, every Sunday night we have family dinner, and the two families get together, and we either get together at our house or their house. And the kids see it. And two of our kids have gone off to college. Two of their kids have gone off to college, and they're doing it at their colleges. They're getting together with a group of young people every Sunday and having family dinner, quote unquote. And I think for our kids, it's so important to know that your parents aren't the only people you can go to, right? That you have this village, that you have these aunties and you have these uncles, and you have, and not necessarily biological, but chosen family too. So you have places you can go, and you have mirrors in your life that you can see ideas of who you can become. And I think that's so important in thinking outside of ourselves. My mom had two very close friends who, for my whole childhood, I remember her spending time with them either on the phone or them being at our house with their kids. She didn't have a huge community of friends, but the two friends that she had, she was very, very close to. And we also had our extended family. You know, we had my grandparents until my grandfather passed away. We had my uncle and his friends. So there were people. And then we had our neighborhood, and the people in our neighborhood looked after each other in this very kind and caring way that kind of extended that village.
You know, you just used a phrase that I haven't thought about before, but it's just right. You said they're mirrors. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is the mirror that you might see back from your parents or your immediate family, you know, or the reflection, I should say, is going to look different probably than it does from your friend's mom or your friend. That's an interesting thing to contemplate, how, as you said, it shows you the potential, but I think it shows you a variety, right? Different dimensions of potential.
Exactly. It shows you other ways you can exist in the world, that, you know, the family that you exist inside of, the biological or blended family or whatever your family makeup is, isn't the only way to have family and isn't the only way to grow up. For us, you know, I didn't have any writers growing up. And so the idea that I could grow up and be a writer felt like this deep impossibility in some ways. But at the same time, something must have showed me that I could do this because I've been doing it. And I think it's really important for my kids, for my godkids, for my nieces and nephews to see, hey, you want to be a doctor? Your Auntie Juliet is a doctor. You want to be a lawyer? Your Auntie Michelle's a lawyer. You want to be an actor? Here, your Auntie Cynthia's an actor. So just to say, and to be able to sit down with those people and talk to them and say, what does this take? Or to even be able to sit down with them and say, you know what? My moms are acting crazy right now, and I need to spend some time at your house until things chill out over there.
Okay, so this is what you just said, though, about there was no one in your immediate circle who was a writer. Somebody, mm-hmm. though, held that mirror to you that said, that's possibility right there. And you really don't mm-hmm. know who that is, huh? Doesn't
yeah,
mean
I
that
know
they
who
had
it
to
is.
Oh, who is it? Oh.
Well, it was Virginia Hamilton, it was Toni Morrison, it was James Baldwin, it was Langston Hughes. It was the writers I was reading. It was Judy Blume. So it was the writers I was reading and especially the writers of color, because that just was so, when I finally discovered those writers, were so surprising to me. But it was the mirror I needed. So yeah, it wasn't in my immediate circle and in my extended family. Although my mom did write poetry when she was younger, but no one saw it as a viable career. it was supposed to be a hobby.
Why?
Because I think part of it, my family was part of the Great Migration, and my mother came to the North from the South. For better opportunities for her kids. And those opportunities meant going to college, you know, becoming a professional, quote unquote, and getting a job. And they didn't understand artist communities or the desire to sit at home and create art that might sell or might not sell. You know, it was very foreign to them. And at the end of the day, what my mom wanted for us was for us to be okay. And for her, that meant financially okay, able to take care of oneself.
Jacqueline Woodson is with us. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about her novel, Another Brooklyn, a novel for adults, but really focuses in, brings us inside this circle of friendship among these four young girls in Brooklyn. And what it's like to be inside that powerful circle and how they rely on each other and how memory fits into this and, you know, innocence and the mirrors that they hold up to one another. So I'm asking you, as we talk about friendship, as we have, I know, fairly recently, last month, this is such a rich subject. Is there or was there a childhood friend in your life? And I'm hearing from some of you on Twitter on this, that helped shape the person you are today. I mean, maybe if you hadn't had that friendship, you might be different somehow. Is there someone who brings out your best self? And that is the best. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter here, Maggie says, my best friends bring out my best self and they accept my worst self. Of course, I'm still close to my childhood friends. This is Minnesota. And Emma says, that's true. My best friend from middle school and high school still makes me a better person. We started dating in college. I'm marrying him in June. Reader, I married him. Emma, that's good. And to Richard in Minneapolis. Hi, Richard. How are you thinking about this?
I'm Yupik Eskimo, living in Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
I grew up 50 years ago in a very international neighborhood in Canada. My father in an open adoption, the minister.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my best friends' families did not speak English.
Wow.
And I went over to their houses all the time after school for snacks because it seemed like everybody else served snacks after school to their kids. And I had Chinese food, Russian food, Polish food, Caribbean food, African, everything. And I'm just sorry that I haven't maintained contact with them today, but their influence in my life, lifelong, has been continuous.
Wow. I'm so glad you heard the show. Richard, what was the language, what was the dialect that you started with?
I grew up speaking Yupik. People call it Eskimo, but
wow.
We don't speak Inuit because that's a different dialect. So if I say I'm Yupik, nobody knows what that means.
Yeah. Wow. I'm so glad you called, and it was a pleasure to hear that. Jacqueline, Tracy says, would the family dinners that you were talking about happen if you didn't have kids?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think they probably would, but I think we wouldn't be as committed to every Sunday night because part of what kids need is that consistency. And we do it for the company we need. We need to exhale as grown-ups and say, oh, this is what my week looked like. Help me out. Help me get through this. Or I had a patient who was going through this or whatever the issue is. But for our kids, you know, on Wednesday, my son is asking, are we doing family dinner on Sunday? Even though we always do it unless we're traveling. But they so look forward to spending time with their cousins and god sisters and brothers that and they've been they've done this all their lives because we've been doing it for many, many, many. We've been doing it since my daughter was an infant and she's now 14. And my son is 8. So they know this as a part of what we do. And, yeah, it's a good question, though. The friends that we do it with are very, very close to us, so we would find a way to see them weekly, even if we didn't have kids.
Another listener here wonders on Twitter about whether friendship has changed with today's economy and family reality, and she cites sandwich generation, global work options. Yeah, it's a good question. What do you think?
It's interesting because my family, we're thinking of moving to Italy for a year next year from 2017
to
2018.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we think about is what is it going to look like to be away from our family, our extended family for that long? And everyone promises to come visit. And also we talk about Skyping family dinner, which we've done when we've been traveling or when other people have been traveling or when my niece was at college that first Sunday that she missed family dinner. She Skyped in to family dinner and was eating her meal with us. So
nice.
So it is, again, I think it takes a certain kind of work to be in the room with everyone, however that looks. But I think that it's still possible.
We've got a call from Josh, and I'm really glad he called because I did want to ask you about male friendship and female friendship. So, Josh, good to have you on the line. What are you thinking about with this?
Hey, for one, I'm fortunate enough to have quite a few friends from early childhood that I've retained that just make a huge difference in adulthood. That, you know, I would be the person I am without, you know, any number of them. But it's interesting that you're discussing this. I was thinking about it just in the last few weeks with, of all things, the release of the latest Harry Potter book.
Uh-huh.
I read those books are just like candy. I read them with my kids and my kids. So I read that, and there's a statement in there about the character Draco Malfoy about how envious he was of Harry's friendship when he was younger with the other two characters, Ron and Hermione. I was thinking, there's so many things in literature and in film that are huge cultural touchstones. The fact a lot of people like Harry Potter, like Lord of the Rings, or I've even thought about it with a movie that has become so beloved, like Shawshank Redemption,
mm-hmm.
how really so much of the emotional pull and hold that those movies movies have is rooted in how friendship is expressed.
Exactly.
It's not usually discussed overtly. So no. I just want to make that point.
So you've given me an idea for another show, Josh, which is excellent. It is such a good point. Jacqueline, what would you say?
I think Josh is absolutely right. I think that a friendship gets discussed a lot in narratives for young adults and middle graders. I think, sadly, adults don't tend to read those books unless they're Harry Potter or some of the other ones that got popular. It is one of the things that young adult writers and children's writers tackle all the time in sometimes very subversive ways. And it's always interesting because when you look at what it means to be a young person, those relationships are the core of that coming of age. So I think it does happen in literature, and some of those books get made into movies, and it gets more visible. But a lot of times it doesn't. But I can, off the top of my head, think of 10 books that really embrace friendship and talk about the complexities of it written for young people.
Something you wrote in your author's notes made me curious. You say, a writer writes to hold on. I mean, I got the sense that you were talking about how influential memory is to our identity. Of course it is. But what else were you saying there?
I think a lot of times we write to remember, right? I write because I have all these questions. I always say I write because I have questions, not because I have answers. So I write to figure out. I write to hold on because my books are, although they're not necessarily physically autobiographical, they're emotionally autobiographical. Every emotion my character feels is one that I felt or am feeling as I'm putting it on the page. So, and then you write to remember. For me, when I sit down to write and go, I have to, especially when I'm writing for young people, I have to go back to that place of being 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 17, and really access everything that I remember about that time to put it on the page, and on the page you hold on to it. But it is also, some part of it is you just want to remember. And also in terms of history, I think writers are the keepers of history in this way that they put this stuff on the page, and then the reader goes, oh yeah, something like that happened to me and now I'm remembering it.
You know, I had this, the way you've constructed the book quite deliberately, I had this image almost right away of like a searchlight passing over the landscape and lingering for a couple seconds on a scene and then passing on, almost the way, I guess, a lighthouse works. Does that make any sense to you?
It makes total
sense.
It does?
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I think it's the way memory works, right? Your memory scans, stops, has these full blooming moments of detailed memory.
Right.
And then there's the white space. So you see that in the book. You see the right white space reflecting what's unknown, and also the silence needed between the moments to just kind of absorb the moment that you've just read. And then the memory moves on to the next moment. And because it is memory, you move back and forth in time the way August does in the book. She's a child and she's in an adult. She's a child again. And then she's in another space in time. She's in Tennessee and then she's back in Brooklyn and back and forth like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the way reminiscing works,
mm-hmm.
too. Even if it's not private reminiscing, if you're telling a story, that is the way it works, right? You don't go linearly through and then I did this, because who wants to hear that?
Exactly. Yawn.
Would you read, there's an excerpt that I really loved in the novel, and it kind of fits in well with what we're talking about now. Would you mind just reading a couple paragraphs?
Sure.
On that part? Good.
It was during this summer that I first saw Sylvia, Gigi, and Angela. The three of them walked down our block dressed in halter tops and shorts, arms linked together, heads thrown back, laughing. I watched until they disappeared, wondering who they were, how they became. My mother had not believed in friendships among women. She said women weren't to be trusted. Keep your arm out, she said. and keep women a whole other hand away from the furthest tips of your fingernails. She told me to keep my nails long. But as I watched Sylvia, Angela, and Gigi walk past our window, I was struck with something deeply unfamiliar, a longing to be a part of who they were, to link my own arm with theirs and remain that way forever.
It's Jacqueline Woodson reading from her novel, Another Brooklyn. And to the phones, to Jill in Duluth. Hi, Jill. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, no problem. Yeah, I have a friend that we actually met the first day of first grade when they were sorting us into classes. And we remained friends until high school, best friends. And then we lost touch. She was Catholic and I was being raised more fundamentalist. And when we were very young, first or second grade, I remember she and her mom asked me if I wanted to go to catechism class with her on Saturday. And I was doing a Friday night overnight. And my mother said, absolutely not. Gail doesn't believe what we believe. She's going to hell. And I just remember how that struck me as a kid, that she was the most honest, most fun person I knew. And if that's where she was going, then that's where I wanted to go, too. So it started to be really questioning values and religion very early in life.
Yeah.
And we lost touch in high school because she went to the Catholic high school and I went to the public high school. But we met again some years later in childbirth class about 35 years ago. And we've rekindled our friendship and we've been friends ever since. We just celebrated our 60th birthdays together.
Oh.
We've raised our kids together. And she still has me questioning things every single day.
It's a good friend. Jill, thank
you.
Very good friend.
I think you're
really lucky, too, that, you know, the universe brought you back together, put you in each other's path, and the friendship was still there. That's lucky, too.
Absolutely. It was lucky that we met the first time, and it was lucky that we rekindled after that. So I appreciate every moment with her.
Thanks for the call. So,
yeah, and thanks for the show. It's great.
Yeah, thank you. So, Jacqueline, one of the themes or questions in the novel is what happens in a friendship when there's a betrayal. And, of course, because you talked just now about this emotional autobiographical element to it, I wondered if you've ever lost a friend, maybe not through a betrayal, but just a friend has slipped out of your grasp. I've had that happen, and it's... You know, I feel a certain amount of regret about that. And has that happened to you?
Yeah, you know, there have definitely been people I've had to make choices about. And that's always a heartbreaking thing. When we were talking earlier about the person who said that she got to that moment where she was in crisis and she felt like her friend wasn't there for her. And I feel like definitely been moments where I've said, you know, this friendship is not working anymore for many different reasons and had to walk away from it. And it's heartbreaking, but it also is sometimes a relief that in the book I talk about the girl saying that life was a bag of, that being girl in Brooklyn was a bag of stones they had to carry that they passed among themselves saying, here, help me carry this. And I think there is that way in which sometimes the stones are the other person. And you have to put it down. And so, it is true. We grow and change and our changing can have different effects on different people. And we have to make decisions about that. Of course, it never happened to me, thankfully, the way it happened to the girls in the book. But there were places where I had to make decisions.
That idea of the stones, did you say that being in New York or being in Brooklyn was like carrying a bag of stones?
I said growing up girl.
Growing up girl, okay.
Yeah.
Because I was reading back through, or I think I heard you on Terry Gross a few years ago, and you were talking you were talking about what it means to be a New Yorker. And you said, I think in terms of being a New Yorker, I don't take a lot of mess. I have no tolerance for people who are not thinking deeply about things. And as I heard that, I thought, and the rest of that sentence is, and if you don't like it, you can just, right? I mean, what
you know,
does that mean?
I, I wouldn't say if you don't like it, because I do think it feels like you're fighting when you say you to someone. Everyone who learns to argue lovingly will never say you. They'll say, you know, I do this and this is who I am. But I would never say if you don't like it, you know, because I think that would be painful for someone to hear.
Okay, well, first part of that, yeah.
But I have a deep sense of, I have a deep moral compass for however I was raised or whatever. And I think that people deserve to treat people a certain way. And I think that it's healthy for me to be around people who are thinking deeply about the world, who are questioning everything from race to economic class to gender to, you know, queer rights, whatever it is. And I don't like small talk. It makes me crazy because I always think there's something hiding beneath the small talk. And it's like, let's have a real conversation. Life is short. Like, let's talk about what we're really thinking and what we're really feeling so we can really know each other, as opposed to, yeah, it sure is hot out there today. Yeah, you know, well, I don't know. Maybe
no weather talk.
Yeah.
For Jacqueline. Right. Yeah. Well, that must make you a lot of fun at parties. No, seriously. No, I mean that seriously.
That's great.
Right. Skipping all the awkward small talk and getting right to it. Do you think it's harder to be a woman and be like that?
You know, I don't have anything to compare it to. Right? This is all I've ever been. So I think that I have a lot of male friends and they know who I am. I know who they are. And I don't know if one or the other is harder. I've never, thankfully, had to exist in this corporate world where I had to behave a certain way for certain people. So I don't know. I am very, very grateful with how free I am. Able to walk through the world. I know a lot of people have to give in to the small talk or have to dress a certain way or speak a certain way, and that's not who I am in this life.
You know, walking through the world will be different if you end up for that year in Italy. Is that enriching for a novelist, or might that shake you a little bit?
I think it will shake me. I think, you know, my family, we travel every year. We go to France or Spain or somewhere, or, you know, Dubai or India. I try to get my family out of this country every single year for an extended period of time. So usually it means missing at least 4 family dinners. So so the kids have, they've gone to school in other countries. They've seen how people live in other countries, and they know that the United States isn't the only way. And I think that's really helpful for them. So I think Italy is going to be different because we're a mixed race family, and we speak English. We speak very little, zero Italian. I think we're gonna learn and we're gonna grow, and some of it's gonna be hard and some of it's gonna be amazing, and we'll come back and we'll be different.
It'll be transformational, right? In mm-hmm. a lot of different ways. We're gonna close with some Nina Simone. Can you guess which song I chose?
Because yes, is it the Four Women song, My Skin is Black?
It is not. Is you mentioned Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues.
Excellent. One of the inspirations was her Four Women song for the book, but I love Tom Thumb's Blues, and yes, I have it in the book. Thank you for playing it.
Jacqueline, thank you for the interview. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, me too.
When you're lost in Juarez, and it's Easter time too, and your gravity fails and negativity don't pull you through, don't put on any airs when you're down on Rue Morgue Avenue. They've got some hungry women there, and man, they'll really make a mess out of you.
Jacqueline Woodson's book is called Another Brooklyn, and you can read more about it on the Thread.
If you see St. Annie, tell her thanks a lot. I cannot move, and my fingers are all in a knot. And I haven't got the strength to get up and take another shot. And my best friend, the doctor, won't even say what it is I've got.